Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego County and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. San Diego County is one of the most biologically diverse areas of the United States. Believe it or not, we have a greater variety of plant and animal species right here, all within 90 minutes drive, than nearly anywhere else in the nation and possibly in all of North America. There's a number of reasons for this diversity, including our climate and geographic position and location in North America, and the different habitats our variety of geography provides for. But how do specialists actually count all the species? Who counts the critters and who counts the plants? While most of these surveys have been done over a period of time, in some cases more than 100 years, since 1996, various organizations around the country have been doing the opposite of a long-term species count and instead have been doing what's called bioblitzes. From Washington, D.C. to New York Central Park to Chicago, the purpose for a bioblitz is to quickly answer two simple questions. How many species are in an area, and what are their names? This is the most basic way in which we can describe biodiversity of an area. So why the hurry? Why not the placid pace of academic science? Because we are rapidly losing all kinds of habitat around the world, and the BioBlitz has become a way of acknowledging the speed with which species are coming to an early end because of climate change and habitat destruction, and the need to find, locate, and categorize these threatened and endangered species, and hopefully do so in time to put in place conservation measures. The most recent San Diego BioBlitz was just held at Mission Trails Regional Park, and joining us to talk more about the BioBlitz and the need to find and categorize and hopefully save species is Dr. Michael Wall of the San Diego Natural History Museum, where he is the museum's curator of entomology. Dr. Wall, it's good to see you. Welcome to Tree Huggers International.
Thanks, Tommy. Nice to be here.
Before we talk about BioBlitz, you're an entomologist.
Yep.
Can you explain to me what you do and what that component of science is all about?
Well, entomology is the study of insects. There's all different ways that you can study insects. You can be a person who studies the way to kill insects, because there are folks out there who, you know, we don't want termites in our house for good reason. But that's not the kind of entomologist I am. I'm an entomologist who studies the diversity of insects. I describe new species of insects. I try to find out how insects are related to one another so that we can make, actually it can be used in conservation, and trying to find genetically unique insects so that we know which ones are maybe the more important in terms of their genetic identity and so forth. And so I consider myself to be sort of a biodiversity scientist who focuses on insects, and for that reason I'm the curator at the San Diego Natural History Museum of Entomology.
How long have you been there?
I've been there a little over 3 years, 3.5 years, closing in on 3.5 years. So,
now, were you familiar with San Diego County and this great biodiversity the county has before you arrived here?
I was. You know, the San Diego County, as you know, sits in what they call the California Floristic Province, which is considered to be one of the most floristically diverse provinces in the world. It's analogous to areas of the Amazon rainforest and to the southern tip of Africa and Western Australia, all of which are considered to be really floristically diverse. Whenever you have floristically diverse areas, they're going to be diverse in other ways. It's almost like a driver for diversity. If you got lots of plants, then you're going to have lots of insects that eat those plants. And insects in particular tend to specialize on things and kind of divide up the habitat into what we call different sorts of niches. And so you might have some that only feed on the stem of a plant, and some that only feed on the leaves of the plant, and some that pollinate the flowers, and so forth. So if you've got a lot of plant diversity, generally you're going to have a lot of insect diversity. And so when I was coming here, actually interviewing for the job and kind of studying up on the region and such, I knew that this was going to be a place where I could spend the rest of my life, because there's just so much diversity, so much to work out here in this region.
And it's interesting to hear you compare San Diego County, at least on these terms, to the Amazon, because obviously San Diego County, we have the Mediterranean climate here, a little less humid than we would think the Amazon to be. But then you also mentioned Southern Africa, which tends to be more Mediterranean climate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is Western Australia like that as too?
Is Mediterranean as well. There's something about that Mediterranean climate for whatever, you know, a plant biologist could probably give you the answers better than I could. But there is something about that Mediterranean climate that tends to really drive up plant diversity for some reason. All the Mediterranean regions of the world are associated with high floristic diversity.
Now, at the museum, you really have a remarkable collection, and I got to go visit you there a couple of months ago, and it was real. I had no idea the breadth of the collection at the museum.
Yeah,
now you have just the collection of butterflies,
right?
Was staggering.
Yeah.
Now, each of those butterflies are they all representative of a very, very particular niche within a niche?
Butterflies are actually a really good example of this sort of niche partitioning thing that that I was talking about, in that very often the caterpillar does specialize just on one host plant. And so we have some rare butterflies in San Diego County, which will only feed on, say, Takati cypress, or will only feed on some sort of herbaceous thing growing on the ground in the coastal sage scrub. And so they do divide up the habitat generally by host plants.
Are the areas of San Diego County where we see this immense diversity, do we see that in Baja as well, since it's basically the only thing dividing it is an international boundary, but that's
right,
about it?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you do just kind of go just over the border, and we see all the same habitat types. And actually, when we get down into Baja California, you add that now you've got the Sea of Cortez on the other side as well. So, I mean, what, you know, when we talk about the diversity of San Diego County, we generally say, oh, it goes from the coast and through the foothills up into the mountains and then down into the desert transitional and then finally into the full-on desert. So we've got all this nice little ecotone of habitats across the county. Well, all you do when you go down into Baja is you get all that, plus you've got a coast on the other side, and it's a significantly different type of coast. And so just south of the border, things get even a little bit more diverse.
Is there a real impact in San Diego County from not necessarily invasive species, but ornamental species? Is there a real problem with these ornamental species, like an ornamental tree mixing in with the natural species you find here?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there have been cases of things that have been purposely introduced for ornamental reasons that have escaped into the county and have caused problems in some areas. There's some ornamental grasses that pop down into the canyons and can start spreading, impacting that habitat. But then even things that aren't purposefully introduced, and the one that I'm most familiar with as an entomologist is in early 2000s, brown widow spiders, which are relatives to our native black widow spiders. Brown widow spiders are originally from South Africa. They came to Florida sometime back in the 30s. And I imagine what happened is that sometime in the 2000s, somebody from Florida moved here to San Diego County with an egg case of these brown widows. And they have just started to spread really, really like wildfire. And people who are familiar with brown widows and black widows are starting to wonder whether or not the brown widows are impacting our native black widows. And so this is something, of course, that's, you know, sort of interesting because people are scared of widows in any shape, fashion, or form. But here we've got these two kind of scary things, one native and one non-native. And the non-native one, it's something that needs more study, but it looks like it might be impacting our native species.
Do situations like that, does that sort of increase perhaps the urgency of doing a bioblitz and rapidly finding out everything in a particular area?
It's exactly situations like that, because change is happening at a much, I would suggest that change is happening at a much faster pace than it was, you know, when there wasn't as much immigration, you know, not just across borders, but within borders. I mean, I moved here from outside of California, and how many native San Diegans are there really out there? And all these folks that are coming in, we're bringing a little bit of our desires with us, and it might be for a green yard, or it might be for the wild azaleas that you grew in your yard in South Carolina or whatnot. So we bring all these things in with us, and also we're going into the wildland interface with increased development because of the immigration, and all that is having impacts on our native wildlife. And so what does a bioblitz do? Bioblitz goes out there in 24 hours and tries to lickety-split, find as much as we can in 24 hours. Yeah, we could do a better job if we spent a long time doing it. But part of the hook of the BioBlitz is that we're going to go out there, we're going to do it really fast and furious, and in the process, try to educate the people about this diversity that we're finding. Because you ask just somebody in the middle of the street, you say, how many native bees, or just how many bees do you know of in California? How many species of bees in San Diego? And they'll go, oh, I know there's honeybee, and they might know bumblebee, and maybe know carpenter bee, maybe sweat bee, but soon they're gonna run out before they run out of fingers. And, you know, in reality, in San Diego County, we estimate that we probably have 500 species of native bees in our county. And so, you know, that's what BioBlitz can do, is show people, whoa, there's a whole lot of diversity here in San Diego County, and it's just right there below the surface, and all we need to do is rub the sheen off of it a little bit so that people can see it.
I had no idea there were 500 species of bees just in that county. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
We're losing bees around the world.
Yeah, there's been a lot of news about the European honeybee, which is our main kind of domesticated bee, which is incredibly important for pollinating our crops and bringing food to our table, especially the types of foods that really have a lot of flavor that we like fruits and vegetables. And so there is this impact on the European honeybee, and people are starting to have questions about, you know, what's happening with our native bees as well, which also can pollinate some of our crops, but are obviously absolutely crucial to the pollination of all of our native plant species. So, you know, these things are all connected together.
How is the San Diego Natural History Museum involved in the BioBlitz? What's the museum's role?
The way BioBlitz started in association with the Natural History Museum is that when I came here, I did my PhD at the University of Connecticut, and Connecticut actually has a really long history of doing these BioBlitzes. They weren't the first ones to do it, but they've really taken it on and do a good job with it. So I came here having had these experiences as a graduate student, and when I got into the museum, realized this is the perfect institution to put on a BioBlitz, because you have all these scientists who are the leading experts in the diversity of our region, and then you have all these excellent educators who are professionals in interpretation and nature interpretation. So let's bring these two parts of the museum together to create an opportunity for the public to learn more about the biodiversity in our region. So that was the beginning of BioBlitz, and we had a really strong presence this year out at Mission Trails, and last year at Balboa Park, we estimated that we had between 3,000 to 4,000 people kind of cruise through our BioBlitz central area. So we think we had the desired impact.
What areas of Balboa Park are we talking about? Like, were you looking in Florida Canyon?
The guiding rule was that that we didn't want to count anything that was on life support. And that was our way of saying that we couldn't count things that had to be irrigated in order to be living in Balboa Park. Obviously, we couldn't go over to the zoo and count the tigers and the lions and stuff like that. So, a lot of our effort did focus on Florida Canyon, because it is the one area of Balboa Park that's not constantly being adjusted by humans. But then we did have, you know, folks cruising down the Prado and looking for birds in the trees. And, you know, we had a guy and a gal doing algae and diatoms, which are these, like, you know, little unicellular algal-like things. And they were looking in the fountains over at the koi pond and stuff like that. We figured, we'll throw those in there just because it's some cryptic diversity that's out there that people don't see.
What was behind the decision to have the BioBlitz this year at Mission Trails? I mean, different setting altogether.
You know, the first year we wanted to do it in Balboa Park because of that tight association, obviously, between the museum and the park. It just seemed like a natural fit. We wanted to spread the word, I guess, and try out different areas. Mission Trails made a lot of sense for several reasons. I mean, again, it's a great opportunity to reach a lot of people, because Mission Trails is just really well used. It's one of the largest urban parks in North America. I know that Cowles Mountain gets like 3,000 to 5,000 hikers every weekend or something like that. Just a really well-used place, really well-loved by the San Diego community. From the scientist's perspective, Mission Trails is also really interesting biologically, because it is sort of, it's the eastern, maybe not exactly, but close to being the easternmost kind of granitic area in San Diego County. So a lot of these things that normally occur up in the mountains kind of finger down into Mission Trails. And then, of course, you've got things that are normally on the coast kind of finger up into Mission Trails. You've got this river flowing through there, and rivers with their water tend to be a wellspring of diversity. So nice riparian river habitats in there. All these different varied habitats, it's kind of like San Diego County in a little area. All the reasons we said there's diversity in San Diego County, that's the reason why we picked Mission Trails.
It's a good representative slice.
There we go.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Helm, and joining us today is the curator of entomology at the San Diego Natural History Museum, Dr. Michael Wall, and we're talking about BioBlitz. The most recent one just occurred at Mission Trails Regional Park. For more information about BioBlitz, you can go to www.sdnhm.org/BioBlitz, and that's BIOBLITZ. sdnhm.org/BioBlitz. For a more general URL for the San Diego Natural History Museum, you can go to sdnhm.org, just by itself. You can also call 619-232-3821 for more information from the museum. That's area code 619-232-3821. Question for you. Were there any specific scientific studies being done in conjunction with the BioBlitz? Like whenever a space shuttle is sent up or there's a space mission, there's always a couple of science projects that have been attached to it, and they've been lobbying to get on this for years.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys do anything like that with the BioBlitz?
The only thing that we're – last year at Balboa Park, I know that our ornithologist is particularly interested in the, I guess, acclimatization of birds to the urban, you know, encroachment. And so he was particularly interested because obviously Florida Canyon, right smack dab in the middle of a very urban area. I know that he was interested in gathering data for a more longer term project on what birds were there. And that will be added to a data set that he's looking at that looks at the impact of urban encroachment on birds and how they acclimatize to that. In Mission Trails, one of the things that we were looking at was, and this is very anecdotally, we're looking at this, but we're looking at the difference between high impact use areas and low impact use areas along the river. For people who are familiar with Mission Trails, you know that if you go up to the old Mission Dam, that's an area we would consider to be high impact. There are a lot of people walking around in there creating their own trails that have been worn down over time. If you go to the more western part of the river within Mission Trails, that would be a much lower impact area. There's a trail that goes parallel to the river through there, but there's just not as much visitation there because you have to hike to get down into it. It's just not right off of the road there like the Mission Dam. And so one of the things we are interested in is what is the differences in diversity there? Are there some species that don't like all that traffic that are only down in the west? Are there species that kind of like the fact that it's a little bit more cleared out up there by the dam and they're only up in that area? So it's not a hardcore study that's going to be done with lots of, you know, defined sampling quadrats and all that sort of stuff, but we are anecdotally taking a look at that.
Tell me about some of the insect species commonly found at Mission Trails. I just would like to know about some of the species in general commonly found there, but obviously let's start with the bugs, the insects.
Mission Trails, because it does have a variety of different habitats there, it does have a variety of different types of insects. I mean, some things that are of particular interest to the general public that you find out in Mission Trails are tarantula hawks, which are very large black wasps with red wings that hunt tarantulas. And they sting them and they paralyze them and then they kind of lay an egg on them so the tarantula ends up feeding the baby as it grows up. So you've got your tarantula hawks. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Very nice. Very nice. I always say there's nothing that a science fiction writer can come up with that an insect hasn't done already.
Oh,
and,
man.
Yeah. So obviously if there's tarantula hawks out there, that means we must have tarantulas out there. And there we do have tarantulas as well as trapdoor spiders out in Mission Trails. And because it is a riparian habitat with this river habitat, it is one of the more interesting places to be able to see some insects that at least live part of their life cycle in the water. And the best example of that would be dragonflies. So not very common to see dragonflies in San Diego County, but you're almost guaranteed to find them out in Mission Trails because there is such a nice source of water out there.
Are there some insect species at Mission Trails that you're just surprised to find there, like the dragonflies? Like, is there something that you might find, like, in the bayou in Louisiana that you might also happen to find at Mission Trails? Or would that be a real stretch?
That would be a real stretch, I think. I mean, you know, when we first found these brown widow spiders in downtown San Diego in the early 2000s, that was a real surprise. And I never would have expected that to happen. But you never know what you're going to find. There's always a potential for a surprise, but it's not an area that's known to have, you know, a lot of weird disjunct distributions is what we would call it in the biology realm, you know.
Well, I've done a lot of hiking around Mission Trails, and one of the most commonly seen insects by me are these black beetles, which you always see along the trail, and they're called stink bugs.
Right.
Obviously, it's not the scientific name, but the hikers call them stink bugs.
Right.
It's not the most complimentary name.
Right.
And usually you see these guys and they're just doing their own thing.
Yep.
But I wanted to ask you, is it really true if you annoy these fellas, are they really going to stick their butt up and spray something at
them?
Really?
Yeah, definitely do. They have stink glands associated with their rear ends. And if you harass them enough, they'll kind of exude it out. And if you get it on your fingers, your fingers will stink. I mean, it's an anti-predator defense. I mean, you can envision some sort of rodent or even an extraordinarily hungry coyote coming upon one of these things, and they're sniffing it. Obviously, they're going to be sniffing the area that is most produced up into the air, which is the rear end of these guys. So they're going to get it blasted kind of right up the nose. But the interesting thing about those stink beetles is that there are some rodents who figured out a way around that. And one of them is the kangaroo rat. And what the kangaroo rats do is that they'll quickly approach it, grab it with their hands and flip it over and kind of jab its abdomen down into the ground, and then they just kind of eat it like an ice cream cone, you know, and just they don't eat the stinky part at the end, kind of like, you know, you don't eat the girders at the bottom of those cones, you know.
And then you mentioned these particular wasps. Mm-hmm. A frightening name for them. But you mentioned also that there's 500 different varieties of bees.
Yeah.
Are they often found? Is that great a variety found at Mission Trails?
I mean, not 500. I mean, because San Diego County is such a diverse county, that and bees do tend to specialize into different types of habitats. One of the interesting things about bees, our native bees, is that they, unlike so many groups, it do become more diverse when you get down into the tropics, like birds and mammals and stuff like that. Bees are actually most diverse in dry habitats. So the center of diversity for native bees is actually in northern Mexico and southwestern Arizona, in that area. That's where the bee diversity of the world is located. You would never would have think of that. But San Diego has a lot of habitats like that, so that's one of the reasons why we have so much bee diversity here. Mission Trails, if I had to guess, and this would be completely a guess, I would say it might have 200, 220 species of bees in it, which isn't too shabby, but there's a lot of diversity of habitats in it as well.
And when you come across these bees, and not even the Mission Trails, but just in general outdoors, they're not always in hives.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, our native bees are, with very few exceptions, they're solitary bees. And so whereas, you know, honeybees have the queen and they have all of their workers and so forth, these native solitary bees are just single moms out doing their thing. So they fly, they dig a hole in the ground or maybe in a stem of a plant or something like that. They go out, they collect the pollen, bring it back, lay an egg, go out, collect the pollen, bring it back, lay an egg. They do all the work themselves. There's no division of labor like you see in the honeybees.
The collections at the museum, which I spoke about earlier, are really remarkable because they go back 100 years, longer in some cases.
Yep.
This really provides a service to understanding what San Diego County was like.
Yeah.
Is any of that data, I assume it must be, used for environmental impact and concern? If you're going to build something in Tecolote Canyon, what was it like 100 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to build something in Balboa Park, Florida Canyon, do you find a lot of the information that the museum has, is that really benefits the community?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as you said, goes back 100 years and in some cases 20 or 30 years earlier than that even. This is a historical record. I mean, it's called a natural history museum for a reason. It's a historical record of the nature in our area. And how we use that information is, there's many different ways to use it. But I mean, you named a couple specifically right there in terms of, say, a company wants to go in and develop an area and they've got all their permits squared away. But one of the things they might have to do, if there's some sort of habitat in there that is kind of rarish or critical in some sort of way, but there's just no other place on the in San Diego County that they can put what they need to put, then they'll do something which is called a mitigation. There will be another area of land that will be set aside to be a preserve in order so that they can use that land. Well, you want to make those areas comparable, so we want to go back and look historically, well, what would have occurred there? And that's what these natural history collections are about. And you might just say, well, why can't you just go from a list of things that a naturalist said used to be around back in the 20s or something like that? But the beauty of having collections is they are what we call vouchers, that and they're verifiable, and it's a really important part of the scientific method that we can go back and we can look at that and say, oh, well, this is what this person said it was. And so an example might be with an endangered species. There's an endangered species, a butterfly here in San Diego County called the Kino checker spot. And I, as an entomologist, have a difficult time telling Kino checker spots from other types of checker spots that occur in San Diego County. I mean, they just start look very, very similar to one another. So with a collection, if somebody went out and said, you know, well, I saw a Kino checker spot on that land, you can go, well, let's compare it to specimens that have been verified by experts on what Kino checker spot really is. And then you might go, oh, well, that is a Kino checker spot. Huh, that's good to know. That's a new habitat, you know, area for that. So we use these collections, and, you know, much earlier in the program, you were talking about global climate change and the impact. Well, how do we measure change in our nature if we don't have collections, historical collections, to go back and look at? And so we're using all of these things through several different programs at the Natural History Museum to help the conservationists in the region learn more about the history of our lands, and help land use planners in terms of global climate change, what are going to be some of the impacts.
The catch is people just have to listen.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I would also imagine, because of the species diversity, I mean, something that would apply for Tecolote Canyon for mitigation may not apply in La Mesa.
Absolutely.
Or Harbison Canyon.
Sure.
Or Alpine.
Right. And again, that's kind of the beauty of the collections, is that we cover the collections that we have in the Natural History Museum. They span time, which is what I was just talking about, but they also cover space. I mean, we have representation in our collections from all throughout San Diego County, and really, I mean, what we focus on is San Diego County down to La Paz, and so we actually have a really good historical record for the Baja Peninsula as well. And so it's space and time, so that we can look at the distributions of things, find out that, oh, well, this really is unique to Tecolote Canyon, you know, unique to that area. Or, wow, we haven't seen this butterfly in La Jolla since the bean farms, you know, went away back in whatever date. So there's a lot of information that can be garnered, but as you said, we have to look for it, and then we have to listen. I think a lot of natural history museums, the scientists, the curators, the people who are charged with the collections, tend to be very focused on the, one might call, the pure science. At the San Diego Natural History Museum, our scientists, it's not that they're not interested in the pure sciences, but they are so multifunctional, and they're involved with the local conservation community. They're involved with the government agencies that can use this information. They're really taking the collections out to the people. Not literally, you know, but they're taking the data, they're making it available so that we can make good decisions about what we do here in San Diego County. And I think BioBlitz is actually an example of this. Is we're not taking the collections, but we're showing the people of San Diego County how this all happens. I mean, the information that we gather from these BioBlitzes, that goes back into the collection, and it's stored there in perpetuity. It becomes part of our natural history, so that we can go back and maybe we can look at it 10 years. Maybe we can have another BioBlitz in Mission Trails 10 years down the road from now and take a look and see, huh, did we find something different? Anything gone? Anything new there? Some new invasive plants? So forth. And so I'm very proud of the museum for its efforts in being a responsible member of the community and not just sitting down squarely focusing and being maybe perhaps a little bit myopic about the particular pure science field that that person studies.
Is BioBlitz going to be an annual event?
That's what we're hoping for. And so far, it looks good for next year. We haven't completely hammered down a place for next year, but we're looking at potentially doing a coastal, maybe some sort of a lagoon, possibly, in one of the coming years. Maybe not next year, but that's definitely one area that we want to hit because we feel like it's another, again, unique part of San Diego County. Not necessarily unique, but it's a within San Diego County, it's a habitat we want to take a look at.
Wetlands aren't what they used to.
I mean,
they really are a very precious resource now.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Dr. Michael Wall, Curator of Entomology at the San Diego Natural History Museum. Very good seeing you again, and really enjoyed having you on the program to talk about BioBlitz.
Yeah, it was great to be here. I really appreciate you having me come by.
Again, the website for the San Diego Natural History Museum is www.sdnhm.org, and you can get more information about the museum, whether it's hours or even something more specific, at 619-232-3821. Dr. Wall, be well, and we will see you next time.
Thanks a lot.
That's going to wrap things up for another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe. Thanks again to the Curator of Entomology at the San Diego Natural History Museum, Dr. Michael Wall, for stopping by and talking all about BioBlitz. Congratulations on another successful BioBlitz at Mission Trails this year. And to learn more about BioBlitz, go to www.sdnhm.org/BioBlitz. That's www.sdnhm.org/BioBlitz. And again, a more general URL for the San Diego Natural History Museum is www.sdnhm.org. SanDiegoNaturalHistoryMuseum.org. SDNHM.org. The phone number for the San Diego Natural History Museum is 619-232-3821. That's 619-232-3821. And don't forget, the Body Worlds exhibition is currently at the museum, as is the very timely Water, a California Story. The Best of Nature Photography Show gets underway on June the 13th, and the Darwin Evolution Revolution exhibit, that's scheduled to get underway later on this year on November the 7th. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff or management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, go ahead and email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. For more information on Tree Huggers International, I invite you to go to the Tree Huggers International page. Go to fm949sd.com. Go to the Tommy Bio page. You can find that on the right-hand column from the homepage. And once you get to my bio page, you can find the Tree Huggers International link and logo on the right-hand side of the page. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs and our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.